Hello, and welcome to the second ever episode of Critical Analysis, a podcast focusing on unusual but important ways and factors of analyzing literature and its deeper components, meanings, ideals, symbols, and values. For this second episode, I'll be focusing in on another American classic, Their Eyes Were Watching God, by Zora Neale Hurston. Oh, and heads up, spoiler alert. Their Eyes Were Watching God is a classic, and one that is much different from those the likes of The Great Gatsby, which was the subject of episode 1 of this podcast. Their Eyes Were Watching God was written by anthropologist and novelist Zora Neale Hurston in 1937, towards the end of the famed Harlem Renaissance, a period of explosive growth within African-American art and culture in the area around Harlem, New York. Unlike many classics, which center around white, middle-class Americans, Their Eyes Were Watching God shifts the focus to lower-income African-Americans in the Deep South. Specifically, we see the novel revolve around Janie Crawford, an African-American woman living in the incorporated Black community of Eatonville, Florida. The novel follows Janie as she tells the story of her life to her best friend Phoebe Watson, describing the ebbs and flows of her coming of age. Their Eyes Were Watching God is a story of humanity, one which portrays a life as incredibly complex, and as a result harbors some incredibly complex characters. The story seemingly has not one overarching theme. Rather, it acts almost as a biography, a third-person narrative on the trials of Janie's life. This rather unusual aspect of the novel has drawn, and continues to draw, great criticisms, with authors, publishers, and everyday readers alike pointing out the supposed flaw. These critics argue that the story wanders into the territory of pointlessness because it refuses to be overt about, well, seemingly anything. One of the most common of these criticisms is over the praise given to this novel as an important political commentary. The novel follows a life, the trials of that life, and only that life. And so the argument goes that nothing that personal could truly make an important political stance. These critics see Their Eyes Were Watching God as lacking a true statement, then, and thus unable to make the impact that it could have. I would like to counter this argument with a few questions. Mainly, why does the novel have to be overtly political in nature to hold value as a classic? Certainly, there are others which follow a life, or at least a great part of a life, do not need to make a grand political statement to hold this value. The Great Gatsby is an example of this. I would argue, then, that part of this controversy and criticism comes from this idea that any book about the life and growing empowerment of an African-American character, or really any minority for that matter, must be overtly political in one way or another. Must focus on the trials that the protagonist goes through specifically because of their status as a minority. And this is simply not so for Their Eyes Were Watching God. Now, this is certainly not to say that political and social struggles are not an important factor in the lives of many African American characters, and of course, real people too. Rather, this is to point out the double standards of sorts within our descriptions of classics. A description which praises those books written by, especially, racial minorities only if they follow the path of writing and themes set standard by the works of white novelists. This greatly disadvantages non-white authors who work to write about their own life experiences and the more nuanced aspects of those lives and cultures. This is one reason why many novels like Their Eyes Were Watching God are swept under the rug. This sentiment that if a novel revolving around Black characters doesn't focus its entirety on oppression due to race by non-Black individuals, then it somehow holds less worth. And as such, Their Eyes Were Watching God is an outlier in the realm of American classics. Hurston's writing doesn't focus on one specific means of oppression in Janie's life. It is intersectional, describing her as a human facing challenges of racial oppression along with changing social class, being a woman, and the attitudes and lives of those who she is surrounded with. Because of this, Their Eyes Were Watching God is one of those novels which really stands out from the crowd and gathers your attention. And this topic of double standards set for non-white authors is both extremely interesting and important. But this is not the primary focus of today's analysis. Just an important note on the nature of the classics we read and evaluate, as well as the general format of Their Eyes Were Watching God. Today, I want to focus in on something else that stands out about this novel, the dialogue and dialect employed by Hurston. Throughout the novel, Hurston writes the dialogue of all characters in a very heavily accented and stylized notation. This causes the dialogue to be, when read, much more indicative of the way the characters in the book actually speak. It is written as it sounds, with Hurston employing both heavy accent and phrases and grammatical rules specific to a deep Southern dialect. And so we get interactions such as this one from chapter 14.
Tea cake, what you doing back in the quarters when everybody else is still working?
Come to see about you. The bookman liable to toot you off whilst I'm gone.
Tain't no bookman got me to study about. Maybe you think I ain't treating you right and you watching me.
No, Janie, I know better than that. But since you got that in your head, I'll have to tell you the real truth so you can know.
This type of stylistic method of writing dialogue adds immensely to the novel. For one, it helps to keep the audience immersed in this world and story and life, which is exceptionally important when the story has its roots in being and sounding human. Janie's story is portrayed in a way that holds exceptional humanity, and as such, the story would be bland if that aspect was ignored. This dialogue style makes sure that the everyday interactions that make up a majority of the novel hold that power and interest of the audience that makes it all but impossible for many to ignore the story's overarching ideas of humanity. Along with this, the writing of dialogue as it sounds allowed for Hurston to write in subtleties of the characters that may have otherwise gone unnoticed, differences in speaking almost so small that they only subconsciously register, much in the same way as if you were talking to a group of people, all with the same accent, but all with different personalities and backgrounds. As such, through employing not only this heavy dialect, but also modifying that dialogue slightly to fit each character and voice presented in the novel, Hurston is able to create a much more human-sounding narrative while simultaneously keeping the reader engaged by limiting those drastic dialogue changes that could distract from the story. For example, here are two passages from the novel that illustrate the subtle differences in the way that Janie and Tea Cake, who tend to embrace their African roots and skin color, and Miss Turner, who internalizes and externalizes hatred towards non-Caucasian features and people, speak, and thus the subtleties of their personalities as shown through dialogue. The passage audio is pulled from the Their Eyes Were Watching God audiobook. The following passage describes an interaction between Janie and Tea Cake soon after they arrive at the muck, found in chapter 14.
Then Tea Cake took to popping into the kitchen door at odd hours, between breakfast and dinner sometimes. Then often around 2 o'clock he'd come home and tease and wrestle with her for a half an hour and slip on back to work. So one day she asked him about it.
Tea Cake, what you doing back in the quarters when everybody else is still working?
Come to see about you. The bookman liable to toot you off whilst I'm gone.
Tain't no bookman got me to study about. Maybe you think I ain't treating you right and you watching me.
No, Janie, I know better than that. But since you got that in your head, I'll have to tell you the real truth so you can know.
Janie, I gets lonesome out there all day without you. After this, you better come get a job or work out there like the rest of the women so I won't be losing time coming home.
TK, you's a mess. Can't do without me that little time. Damn, little time is near about all day.
So the very next morning, Janie got ready to pick beans along with Tea Cake. There was a suppressed murmur when she picked up a basket and went to work. She was already getting to be a special case on the muck. It was generally assumed that she thought herself too good to work like the rest of the women, and that Tea Cake pumped her up to that. But all day long, the romping and playing they carried on behind the boss's back made her popular right away. It got the whole field to playing off and on. Then Tea Cake would help get supper afterwards.
This passage has many important instances of both accent and dialect being employed in the dialogue. For example, when Tea Cake says, "Come to see about you," accent and dialect are being used. The usage of the wording "ta" instead of "to" highlighting accent, and the whole phrase an example of dialect, as many in other areas or cultures may not use this same phrasing. A similar example is found in Janie's dialogue, when she says, "Tea Cake, you's a mess, can't do thout me that little time." Here, "a mess" and "thout me" are examples of accent, while "use" and "that little time" are more dialect-heavy word choices. These wordings are not just stylistic choices either. They actively work to define the characters speaking those particular lines. Besides helping the reader to identify and understand the geographical background of the characters through accent, the dialect choices are also indicative of class and educational background, as well as what is important to each character. This will be discussed later in more detail with our upcoming passage. Another important thing to note from this passage is Hurston's applying dialect-specific phrases to the narrator, as seen in the line, "It got the whole field to playing off and on." Here, the narrator voice is itself employing dialect, although to a notably lesser degree than the character dialogue. By doing this, Hurston helps the reader continue their own immersion in the story, with the voice acting as a believable insight into the minds of the characters in their lives, especially Janie, by imitating some of the dialect patterns of those characters themselves. As an addition, this helps to keep the flow of the text and setting, as the narrator takes on a voice with somewhat similar dialect to the characters, and thus acts as a less jarring transition between dialogue and narration. Now, to see the ways in which Hurston uses dialect subtleties to differentiate between characters, here's another passage from chapter 16, where Janie is talking to Miss Turner.
"What make you think that, Miss Turner? To get hold of a woman like you, you got more nerve than me. I just couldn't see myself married to no black man. Too many black folks already. We ought to lighten up the race." "Now, my husband didn't have nothing but himself. He's easy to love if you mess around him. I loves him." "Why, you, Miss Woods, I don't believe it. You just sort of hypnotized, that's all. No, it's real. I couldn't stand it if he was to quit me. Don't know what I'd do. He can take most any little thing and make summertime out of it when times is dull. Then we lives off of that happiness he made till some more happiness come along." "Well, you're different from me. I can't stand black niggas. I don't blame the white folks from hating them, because I can't stand them myself. Another thing, I hates to see folks like me and you mixed up with them. Us ought to class off. Us can't do it. We's a mango people, and all us got black kin folks as well as yaller kin folks. How come you so against black? And it makes me tired. Always laughing. They laughs too much and they laughs too loud. Always singing old nigger songs. Always cutting the monkey for white folks. If it wasn't for so many black folks, it wouldn't be no race problem. The white folks would take us in with them. The black ones is holding us back." "You reckon?"
Course, I never thought about it too much, but I don't figure they're even going to want us for company. We's too po'.
Immediately in this passage, we can see examples of shared dialect. Miss Turner uses the phrase, "It's too many black folks," a phrase which falls in line with the general feel of the dialect used in Janie's dialogue. Similarly, we see Janie continue to use dialect with the phrase, "If he was to quit me." However, Hurston also uses this passage to subtly inform the audience of the differences between the two, and, specifically, their views on black versus Caucasian features and cultures. One of the most obvious of these differences is Miss Turner's usage of the N-word. Plenty of characters before her have used the same word, and so on a surface level, this seems to hold no important distinction. However, Hurston uses context to increase the power behind Miss Turner's usage of the word. In previous chapters, when the other African-American characters use the N-word, they're primarily referring to one another as a group, using the word almost as a casual expletive or even note of some affection. Although here it is incredibly important to note, this does not mean that the word is being used in a way intended to empower the users and recipients by reclaiming it, especially not when compared to how some black individuals use the word today. In comparison, Miss Turner uses the word a lot, and from her self-pronounced views on black individuals, it can be inferred that she intends to use it more so as a slur than identifier. And interestingly, while Miss Turner seems to most want to differentiate herself from the black folks, she's also the most ready to use the N-word. This, along with helping to back up the idea that Miss Turner intends to use the word as a slur, is also indicative of her hatred towards those with darker skin, and may provide insight into why, among other things, she tries to speak differently than the other black folks on the muck. It is also a sign, in that sense, of the racist nature of the time and how it fostered these attitudes of colorism seen in Miss Turner's character. And we can also see examples of Miss Turner using this slightly different dialect in comparison to many of the other characters in this passage, such as when she says that, "us oughta class off." This phrasing and word placement does follow the same general accent patterns as Janie and Tea Cake, for example, but seems a bit different in comparison to their dialect usage. In a way, this phrase shows through as almost inconsistent with the previous dialogue set tone in the novel, but, as the passage goes on, flows perfectly fine with the rest of Miss Turner speaking. This helps point out an important distinction. Miss Turner's dialect tends to subtly change when in reference to her perceived superiority of Caucasians. And this distinction is no accident. Miss Turner also uses othering language, such as heavy uses of the word they, when describing the perceived cultural accents of black individuals, another dialogue aspect not found very heavily in the speech of Janie or Tea Cake. These contrasts, when put together, show a subtle but brilliant usage of dialect differences to not only differentiate between characters, but also to build up the individual characters and their ideals and values in the mind of the reader. And, in this way, Hurston subtly uses dialogue and dialect to greatly enhance the story and reading experience. Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God is truly an American classic unlike any other. It manages to break down the barriers set up by white middle-class ideals of what a classic should be, and establishes itself as a brilliant story of life, intersectionality, and intertwined struggles, and shows some of the best dialogue and dialect subtlety in writing that many readers have ever encountered. And so, to no surprise of mine, Their Eyes Were Watching God will continue to go down in history as one of the great American classics. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Critical Analysis. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, please let me know. And if you have any ideas, make sure to send those in. Thank you again, and see you next time.